Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In today's podcast, we talk about some of the most common STDs, HSV1, HSV2, and why most people actually have this. We talk about the difference in having an antibody positive screen and having a viral titer that's around. We also talk about some of the common false positives and false negatives. If you have tested positive for HSV2, then and you also have a positive for HSV1, there's about a 50% chance that test might be a false positive. So listen on, and we'll do our best to explain in layman's terms. Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast. I was just wondering when my 4-year-old would get his first STD, so I guess we should talk about that.
And while we're talking about that, we should figure out if it's a primary infection or if it's actually a non-primary infection.
Yeah.
So when it comes to herpes viruses, and HSV 1 and 2 specifically, a lot of people are told that it was a primary infection, and it may in fact be the first time they've had genital symptoms. But for most people, they have already acquired HSV1, and thus, technically, it is a non-primary infection.
Yeah, actually more likely to get HSV1 from your grandma than from that darn ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend. Although it is easier to blame them on that.
Yeah, there's all sorts of interesting data and angles we can look at this from. Basically, the three types: you have primary infection, non-primary infections, and then recurrent infections. Mm-hmm. Non-primary is going to be the majority, because if you are already infected by HSV1, used to be this was more commonly a cold sore, as what people would call it.
Oral herpes.
Yeah. But now the HSV1 and HSV2 are sort of prevalent across all mucous membranes.
Yeah, because baby boomers invented oral sex. So there's transmission, X transmission, if you will, not just oral to oral or genital to genital. So yes, you can get HSV2, and you can also get HHV6 and CMV and all sorts of different herpes viruses. EBV, you gotta love them. They're all technically herpes viruses, and you can get them multiple ways. You can even get them via anal mucosa. So how wonderful. If we seem a little bit sassy today, it is because we're both a little sick and tired of the misconceptions. Whenever people say they want a STD test and they pop positive, whether it's a false positive or a true positive, which we will get into, there often is a very long discussion. If there's time, it might even be 30 minutes, it might even be an hour. So hopefully this puts some of those misconceptions to rest.
Yeah. So let's talk on HSV1 to start. So grandma kisses the baby.
Yep.
How quickly is that baby developing an HSV1 infection?
Yeah. So as far as like the stage in life, if you look at 5 to 9-year-olds, almost 60% of 5 to 9-year-olds will have an HSV1 infection. So obviously in their case, it's not actually sexually transmitted. It is kiss transmitted, if you will. After you get an HSV1 infection, it can take a couple weeks to get an antibody. Seropositive is what we call that. And often you shed, and even if you get it via a different way, whether you get it in the anal mucosa or the vaginal mucosa or the mucosa around the urethra in males, or orally, you are pretty likely to shed it via multiple locations, and often for up to a year, regardless of your age. But yeah, if you look at the prevalence, which is what percent of a certain age group has it worldwide, about 60% age 5 to 9, and about 70%. 67% 10 to 14, and right at about 70% from 15 to 19.
Yeah, and obviously the prevalence goes up with age because these infections, they sort of lie dormant. You think of chickenpox, and then someone gets shingles later from the same virus, same viral infection.
Yep.
And it makes sense that people would have it and it would progress in prevalence like that.
Yep.
And to your point, it works in multiple directions. So if you have, let's say you did acquire HSV-1 orally via kissing, then you can very well shed that from the genital mucosa, or vice versa. If you acquire HSV-2 via genital contact, then you can shed that orally as well. You do see numbers and like how many people they're shedding go down, at 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. But it's somewhere around, I believe, the ballpark of 10% of people could still be shedding several months later after that primary infection.
Yep. Thousands of you, the main thing to worry about is if your partner is pregnant or may become pregnant or may be pregnant, you do not want a female partner. You do not want a pregnant female to have a primary or a severe recurrent infection. Sometimes it's kind of difficult to actually tell if it's a primary or recurrent infection, even if they've had antibody titers, which we'll get into later. Herpes virus is the H in torch infection. And if you consider C a herpes virus, which it is the C in torch infections. Torch infections are just really bad infections in fetuses that lead to a lot of neonatal morbidity. So really sick babies with a lot of problems.
Yeah, and you can see some of the prevalence rates here. We'll put this chart up on the screen. You can see those vary different cultures. So you have your sort of worldwide population averages, and then the example here in the Eastern Mediterranean, you see about a 10% higher prevalence when people get to their 40s, let's say.
Yep.
And that's just because of the culture there. It's normal to kiss people when you're greeting.
Yep.
And you're going to have more transmission that way.
Yep. That's why a lot of doctors are anti-kissing during greeting, anti-handshake, anti-fist bump. They like the elbows.
That's right.
Yep. The germaphobe doctors. So, which I suppose there is some merit to that. Interestingly, if you look at, and by the way, a caveat to all this, we'll talk about this more later, is are they doing immunoassays or are they doing Western blots for these tests?
Given that the Western blot costs about 10 times as much, most of these studies are done using immunoassays. And I don't know, perhaps we could jump ahead to what the positive predictive values and false positives look like there.
Yep. Lots of high-level view again. Lots of false negative HSV-1 tests. So if you test negative for HSV-1, there's actually a pretty good chance that you're not negative. If you test positive for HSV-2, there's actually a pretty good chance that you're not positive.
So before we give people the numbers, what would you have guessed the false positive rate for HSV-2 was prior to looking at the data that we saw earlier?
False positive rate. So of the positives, I'd guess, decent test, maybe if it's an immunoassay, it's not perfect, maybe 10% of tests are false positives.
Yeah, I would have thought the positive predictive value is something like 85%, maybe 15% are kind of
90,
indeterminate or giving you a false positive. But the false positive rate for HSV-2 immunoassay is actually 50%.
Yep.
So if you have been told that you have HSV-2 and HSV-2 is the genital herpes, it could very well be either cross-detecting HSV-1 or be throwing a false positive. It's a very high number. It's like a coin flip, basically.
Yeah. So takeaway here, if you've tested positive for HSV-2, you can do confirmatory testing, although it's very expensive out of pocket and your insurance probably doesn't want to cover it. Unless it's like a very specific situation, like you're immunocompromised.
And the other scenario would be if you had a culture that was done on an active lesion, then that's going to tell you they do a PCR for that and they can tell. But for most people, if they're just trying to see, well, what is my status? Because they saw a headline, right, that says, hey, most people have herpes and don't know it because they haven't had an outbreak. You get a test with a 50% false positive rate. That's a lot of misdiagnoses.
And they've done studies after primary infection. So someone has a primary infection, they culture the lesion. Yes, it is indeed herpes. 2 months later, they had people swab themselves to see how many of those days were positive. And about 12% of the time, it was still positive. So they're still shedding. even without lesions, almost all the time without lesions, about 12% of the time at 2 months, and about 7% of the time at 10 months.
So even almost a year later, you're still actively shedding. So the idea that you are unable to transmit if you are not having a breakout is mm-hmm. false. I suppose it is less likely the longer it has been, but yeah. It's definitely not zero.
Correct. I guess we should talk about the false negative rate or the negative predictive value of HSV-1 tests as well. So HSV-1 is very common. I don't know if we've mentioned yet, but the prevalence in some areas gets well over 90% as you're an adult, but 70 to 80% in general. So what's the chance that your test was negative, but you're actually positive?
Yeah. So if we think about this, like HSV-1 has a 10% false negative rate, which means what you're looking at in the table we just put up on the screen is potentially a little bit lower than what the true prevalence rate is, because some of those are false negatives, meaning someone actually was infected with HSV-1. For whatever reason, the immunoassay just didn't pick up the antibody.
Yeah. So the true prevalence of HSV-1 is probably more near 80% worldwide. Maybe even a bit higher than that.
I think that's reasonable.
This data is also from almost 10 years ago, I believe. And we know that all prevalences of most STIs have increased significantly in the last few years.
Yeah. And if people are interested and want to know, well, what code or what test should I get if I want to know, you know, absolute gold standard, yep. the best, most sensitive and specific test, you can get it's called an immunoblot test for HSV through LabCorp. And the code is 138487. You can find this if you Google it. It's going to be substantially more expensive. So if you're trying to run this through insurance, I would be very hesitant about that, because you may get a bill for several thousand dollars.
I would not be surprised if insurance didn't cover it for $1,000. Now, our patient price on this is much lower. It's still over $100, which is much more expensive than just getting the antibody tests. But even with our wholesale prices, it is quite expensive.
Yeah, and here's just another data point to reference. Like you spoke, frequency of all sorts of, you know, herpes virus infections, because there's been a significant increase in oral sex, and at the same time, a significant decrease in any sort of protection being used during penile oral sex.
Yeah, I suppose we could also mention that, obviously, even if there is condom use, even during oral sex, you can still get herpes viruses. So people could probably construe this as like a very negative thing against sexual contact. People in general do like to have sex, most people, myself included. The way to take this away, I suppose, is if you have a partner and you have a outbreak, maybe you have a cold or something, and this scenario we see all the time in clinic. Mm-hmm. Let's say you've been married for quite some time. It is possible that it is, not infidelity. There are a lot of, like, most likely one or actually most likely both of you have had herpes since you're very young. But there's just another reason why it's presenting. Primary outbreaks can be severe, but recurrent outbreaks can also be severe. So it's important to keep all of this in context.
Yeah, you can just think of it like your immune system being distracted by something else it's trying to fight off, and then you have inflammation and gives the herpes virus a chance to flare up, and then you have a recurrent infection.
Why don't we just tell everybody to not have any sex for like 4 generations, and then all STIs will be completely eliminated. Just do IVF.
REIs endorse this. But talking about the transmission and protection, you know, some of the things that you could consider there, condom use is going to decrease the risk. It's not going to be zero. There are antiviral medications mm-hmm. that can reduce shedding. Again, it's not going to reduce it to zero.
Yep.
And these are some interesting statistics. So the median number of acts of intercourse, sex acts for transmission to occur was 40. So what does that mean if someone has, let's say they have sex 39 times?
Yeah, so that's below the median, so they would not contract herpes.
So they are less likely to, you can put kind of a 50% mark at that 40 number. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's less than a 50% chance you're going to get it. And this is all statistics. On the individual level, it doesn't matter. It's sort of about what risk are you willing or not willing to take.
Are you more likely to develop herpes if you have sex 39 times with 39 different partners or 41 times with one partner?
We'll have to wait for the study to come out on that one. I think they're still recruiting.
The data is not clear. The science is not there. So we'll report back if there's ever a randomized control trial, double blinded, with that information.
Yeah. And it does happen fairly early in the relationship. The range is a month and a half to 10 months in this small study, a couple hundred patients. And then condom use declined over time. And the time to infection was greater in individuals whose partners told them up front, hey, I have genital herpes, mm-hmm. versus those who did not. 270 days versus 60 days. So mm-hmm. if you don't know what you're getting into, you've got 60 days. Even if you are trying to be careful, it looks like you are getting infected on average in less than a year.
Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting question. It's like a Punnett square game theory. It's actually game theory. Would you choose, so let's say you don't know your HSV status, so it's safe to assume you're HSV-1 positive, and let's play the game, since we're males, let's play the game as a male. Would you want your wife to have antibodies or have immunity to HSV going into the conception period? Absolutely, you would want them to. So you should actually thank their grandma for kissing them, because I'm sure that's how they got it. Going into pregnancy. Same thing for antibodies to CMV.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like the most natural immunization is grandma's kiss.
Yes.
Because you're getting that early in life, getting antibodies to HSV-1. Mm-hmm. And there are some trials going on with HSV vaccines now, but grandma was the original HSV vaccine.
Yeah. HSV-1 also leads to less viremia, so less illness after getting HSV. Females much more often, they have more mucosa, probably higher viral loads, have systemic infections. You can even get HSV meningitis. You can get fevers, again, more often in females, usually happens, you know, a week after the first infection or the first cold sore or whatnot. But yeah, that's one of the main emphases of March of Dimes now is another herpes virus infection, CMV. Mm. Again, the C in torch infection. So the ideal scenario is immunity to both CMV and HSV, so you're not going to have a primary infection of either one of those during pregnancy.
And now let's talk about this incredibly unclear chart that tells us about the difference in Western blot versus immunoassay testing for HSV. So it took me longer than it should have to decipher this because the data were particularly unclear.
Yeah, this looks like something that they would post on, like a step one question or during medical school when they're trying to test your knowledge of statistics, where you're learning about positive predictive value, negative predictive value, sensitivity. Often they give you these charts where you have a positive and negative on both sides. The top, I guess, it's showing you your Western blot. On the x-axis, on the y-axis going down, it's showing you your immunoassay. And as you can see, under HSV-1, there's a whole lot of positive Western blots with false negative immunoassays for HSV-1. For HSV-2, there's a whole lot of negative HSV-2s on Western blot, but a false positive for immunoassay.
Yeah, so what you do here is you're going and looking at the positive predictive value, negative predictive value, and sort of working backwards, reverse engineering this. I prefer not to have to solve word problems when I'm looking at the data, but the data are there, but thought we would take some time to throw this chart under the bus. Yep.
Like Huberman says, the data are the data, so we'll move on. This is probably not very interesting to the average layman, but hopefully you developed an appreciation for statisticians making good charts.
Yeah, and a couple of other, I guess, sidebars here. What about Mycoplasma genitalium?
Yeah.
This certainly wasn't in my school curriculum. I don't know if it was in your medical school curriculum, but it's less heard of compared to Trichomonas, chlamydia, gonorrhea, these sorts of things.
Yeah, so this is a relatively new infection. It was just isolated in 1982. So that's when they made it in a lab. I mean, that's when they found it for the first time. But yeah, in all seriousness, Mycoplasma genitalium is becoming much more common. It can spread lots of ways, orally, rectally, genitally. But the big takeaway from this is you should test it because it is, almost all of it is resistant to macrolides, like your Z-Pak that you get for chlamydia, resistant to that, almost always. And it's not going to, it's also kind of like inherently, it's intracellular, it's resistant to cephalosporins as well. So if you get your shot of Herceptin or whatnot, then it's also resistant to that. And if you have a short course of doxycycline, it's also resistant to that. So it spreads a lot.
Those sound like the most common three antibiotics people are given for their STDs.
Yeah, that's what's problematic about it. But you can get reinfected with it very easily. But the important thing is it can also cause pelvic inflammatory disease to some degree in women. The data are becoming more and more clear with that. And it appears very likely that it colonizes men. It causes urethritis for sure. But I would certainly want this tested before freezing sperm samples. And you should test it, even if you're negative one time, you should continue to test this longitudinally over time, because it does seem something, it seems like something that you can spread orally or even oral to oral and then cross-contaminate your own body with.
It's interesting. And am I correct in thinking that the M. genitalium is going to go dormant as well if it is frozen? That's not going to kill it. And then basically you are, you know, creating an environment that's not the most hospitable for the embryo that you are using the sperm to fertilize the egg with.
Yeah. It might not be the absolute end of the world. You certainly don't want to have an active infection while you're pregnant. But I see no reason why not to screen all males and all females, especially during the preconception period or egg or sperm freezing period for something like Mycoplasma G.
It seems like a no-brainer because this is a very cheap test. It's not hundreds of dollars. Mm-hmm. And if someone is sperm banking, for example, then, I mean, that costs a significant amount of money, and this is not hardly any extra in proportion to that.
One thing we should note, and I think we've talked about this in another podcast, is you don't want a clean catch for this. And this is one of the things you actually want a dirty catch for. You do not want to clean off the area in and around the urethra before testing, because you could clean off that first little bit of sample, and you do not want to pee some and then pee the sample. You want it to be the first stream. Some urologists even recommend like the first stream of the day. That's more so for prostate. If they're not going to massage the prostate when they get the sample, not to go way off into some rabbit trail. Within the scope of this, dirty catch, first urine, get that sample if you're not getting swabbed, which is better.
Yeah, so I think that's a good sidebar, a lesser known STD that either colonizes or infects and is associated with some of these pelvic inflammatory disease, some conditions like that. What about people who have HSV2 who have never had sex?
Yeah, so that is certainly possible. It is possible to have HSV2 and never have sex. It is also possible to have sex and not have HSV2. Believe it or not, we found one study. We were actually looking into other modes of transmission. We'll have a separate podcast that will also link or connect here some way about what ways or what are the excuses, good and bad, the tier list of excuses, if you will.
Almost like a Mythbusters, and ranking each excuse on a scale.
Yeah, so they studied girls between the ages of 13 and 16, and in order to test whether or not they were telling the truth about whether they had had sex, they tested an HSV2. So if they're HSV2 positive, they said, oh, you're lying, even if they got HSV2 from kissing grandma, orally, which is possible. And then if they did not have HSV2, they said, yes, you're a virgin for sure. And about 25% of the virgins had a trichomonas infection.
But you said that it's possible to have sex and not have HSV2. Did the researchers not take this into account?
Apparently they did not. Now, what they postulated in this study, and again, we'll link it if you're interested in reading, is that they got it from toilet seats or other methods.
Water splashing,
which I'm sure some of them did, but I bet most of the 25% Of the 13 to 16 year old girls, their parents were probably around when they went, you know, door to door or whatnot, or in the clinic. And when they were asked if they had had sex, they just said no.
Yeah, it's a good consideration. And it's a bit of a stretch to attribute, you know, basically one in five to water splashing or toilet seats.
Yep. I think that pretty much sums it up for today's info. Any questions or concerns, or if you want to tell us your frustration or your history with HSV-1 or HSV-2 testing, or your experiences in the dating world. We've both been married for several years, so we don't really know how things are out there since the pandemic has skyrocketed rates and whatnot. Please comment, and it's appreciated for the algorithm.
Yeah, let us know your false positive story after you have the immunoblot test. We'd love to know if that is translating to the real world from what we see in the research.
Yep.
All comments are appreciated. Thank you for your time. Thank you for watching. And may God bless you with health and happiness.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.